Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, February 20th. I'm Ray Graff. Time once again for another science forum on Vox Pop. We have our panel of experts ready to field your scientific questions. If you do have a scientific question, I suggest you call 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Email us if you wish, voxpop@wamc.org. That's voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. The science panel is here. They're chatting. They're in a great mood. We'll soon put a stop to that. The show begins after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We reconvene the Science Forum today, and our experts are champing at the bit to answer your questions. The number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can email us if you want to, voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org. But the number once again is 800-348-2551. This is the exciting part of the show. Get out your pens and your paper, everybody. Let's have our panel of scientists sign in, please.
Sure, Barbara Brown.
Oh, let's turn your microphone on.
Okay.
Oh, there we go. Now you're all
now
set.
Now I'm on.
Hi, now you're really here.
Thanks, Zach. It's Barbara Brobetz. I'm a biochemist from SUNY Cobleskill.
And I'm Jim Pickett. I'm an organic chemist, retired from GE.
And I'm Roger Giaboni. I own a company called Rogers High Fidelity, and I'm an engineer.
Congratulations on your new amp, the fine review of your new
Thank
amp.
Thank you.
The
Corona.
Aptly titled Corona. Great amp, lousy
Bad
name.
Bad marketing timing.
That's right.
Bad RNA.
Oh, yeah, and I'm Ed Stander. I'm from SUNY Cobleskill, and I deal with esoterica.
All sorts of esoterica?
Any type
and
of esoterica.
And her sisters?
Yeah, well, if possible.
It's good to have the other Jim Pickett with us today because I had an email exchange with another Jim Pickett, and, well, it turned out it wasn't you.
That's right.
And
there's more than one.
I said, save your funny comments for the science forum, and he said, what are you talking about?
So yeah, almost got me fired.
Yeah, you know, he said, well, it's nice to be named like someone who's famous. So apparently you're also famous.
Ooh. Famous Jim Pickett.
Well, do we have any homework on the last show? When did we do the last show?
We did it 2 months ago. We ran into an impeachment hearing,
Okay, so did everybody have homework? Anybody?
We did not. So. We scored 100% on the last quiz.
No way. Anybody have anything exciting to talk about before we go to the phones? Okay, this
is
good.
Tell me about the DNA from bats and snakes in the...
we might as well talk about the...
Sorry.
Nope, that's okay.
Let's talk about the
coronavirus. I mean, that was interesting, and I only got the tip of it.
The COVID-19.
So COVID-19 has been characterized. Its genetic material and its shape and its size have been characterized pretty early on in this epidemic. And it is in a... Everybody knows it's in the class called coronavirus because that kind of was the name that stuck. And rhinoviruses are coronaviruses. So that's the common cold. So it's in that same family as the common cold with a big kicker. And so originally they looked at the commonality between the genetics of inside these little viral particles of this new guy to all the old guys. And they compared it and found that it's a kind of a combination of a bat cold with a snake cold mixed together.
Do bats get colds?
I guess they do. They have quite the nose.
Sniffles.
Yeah. So bat sniffles plus snake sniffles plus a little bit of independent assortment has gotten us the lovely COVID-19.
Now, has this virus ever been exposed to humans before?
It's never. It seems to have started in 2019 in the late fall. Now they're going back and kind of tracing where the origins happened beyond like the city of Wuhan, but like who could have had it early. It's always what we do in epidemiology is we'll kind of keep with the run, but then we'll also look historically back.
And how do you do that?
You go back and look at records, especially x-rays, but you can't go and, well, you could test someone for antibodies at this point, but I think I don't know that they've done that yet. It may not be quite the time to do that.
My question was more, has the human species ever been exposed to this virus?
No, prior to last fall, no.
How do we know that?
Because we have Centers for Disease Control and other WHO-type of entities, especially something that causes such grave illness and such morbidity and mortality, that is sickness and death. You would have known had you seen it before. And that's why it got its COVID-19 name, because it needed a new name because it was a new virus that hadn't been seen in humans before. Good news on the front of that, though, today is that it seems as if infants and children are not as affected as far as mortality is concerned. Right. They can get sick with this, but it looks like the young people are not dying of it in the same rate as the adults and then the elderly adults.
Mostly the elderly, though, from what I understand.
Mostly the elderly. But that's the case also with flu, for example. But the young also are affected with flu, which, of course, is also going around right now. But in this case, it seems that coronavirus is making the young people succumb.
Interesting. Now, before we get to the phones, I have one question, not really scientific, but maybe you can answer it all the same. The number is 800-348-2551.
It's not a question.
Wait for it. 800-348-2551. I heard on the news last week or earlier this week that, you know, they've named it COVID-19 based on whatever.
Right, it's a coronavirus that was discovered in 19.
Right.
Don't know where the D came from.
Okay. One of the newscasts, and I don't remember which one, said they don't like to have the name of the virus be the name of a place, for instance.
Correct.
But what about the Coxsackie virus?
Yeah, my hometown,
by
the way.
What's up with that?
Well, that was a prison, so I think it was like, well, the prisoners don't count, so let's just call it the Coxsackie virus.
And that's okay.
Well, I'm not thrilled with the conversation I have in an elevator when I say I'm from Coxsackie, because it usually starts with either a prison or a horrible disease that makes your tongue swell up.
All right. Well, let's go.
And I had a great childhood. Thank you.
Let's go to the phones. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's the Science Forum. Bob in Athol, Mass. Bob, you're on.
Yes. Thank you.
Hi.
Hi there. This is a kind of a weird question, but frankly, I've been puzzled all my life because I've heard astrophysicists suggest that our universe started out as a rather small mass. You know, they use the size of a grapefruit as an illustration, and it had a big bang. Well, my question basically is, if you had all the mass and energy of the universe compacted in such a small volume, wouldn't the gravitational field associated with that small volume be more than sufficient to generate, a black hole? And if nothing can escape from a black hole, does that mean we're still in one?
Well, this is going to the esoteric again.
Yeah, this is esoteric for sure. One thing to consider is that if all the universe is in one place, certainly, at that point, it wasn't mass. It was probably energy. And as Einstein showed, energy is equal to mass times the speed of light squared, E equals mc squared. So effectively, you start off with something which is not mass, it's energy. And you can put as much energy as you want in a very, very small place. So there's no reason why you would have to even consider that at the beginning it was a black hole. In the end, it could wind up going into a black hole, because now you have mass, and as the mass accumulates, then you can, in a black hole, you start increasing the mass over and above, and it starts attracting things, and then you have a gravitation problem.
But we're still in the outbound swing, right?
Well, supposedly.
Well, right. I mean, we're not even sure that there will be a collapsing upon itself, right?
No. In fact, there are three possibilities.
This is currently expanding, of course, at an ever faster rate. So I guess the question about collapsing is a non-question. But so you're suggesting that the concept of gravity didn't even exist until the universe was more than sufficient in volume, so as when gravity came about, there was no danger of it's still being, sufficient to generate its own black hole.
You know,
so I guess that's what you're saying.
Right. I couldn't say it better myself.
Really?
In fact, I didn't say it as well as that.
Well, that was good then. Great. Yeah. Hey, Bob, thank you very much. Maybe we should have some theremin music when we have questions like this.
I'll bring it in next time.
So the topology of the universe thought to be flat now, right?
Satelloid.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Saddle-shaped.
Now, that's interesting. Well, on the astronomy show, I'm told that it is flat and infinite, or possibly infinite.
Yeah, I thought flat. I thought flat.
Okay, flat. Make it flat. I don't care.
I mean, flat meaning that
going on forever.
Here's
yeah,
the story.
That there's
you have three possibilities. One is it's round, and it's going out effectively, and it'll go back in again because gravity sooner or later will push it back together again. And then there's the possibility of it being saddle-shaped, which means that it sort of spreads out and then dies, and it depends on the amount of mass in the universe. And the third possibility is that it just sort of goes until it stops.
Yeah.
And effectively, it's, as I've heard it, it's equivalent to taking a coin and flipping it up in the air. It's either head, tail, or it falls on its side. And right now, what it appears is that it's going to fall on its side.
Which is the flat.
On the edge. It's going to land on
its
edge.
Oh, it's going to land on its side.
Which is the most unusual situation, but it's because the mass of the universe isn't changing over time. The mass of the universe is staying relatively constant as it's expanding by calculating what we can see of the mass of the universe.
Which is a tiny percentage of the universe, right?
Well,
the universe is infinite, we're looking at 0%, right?
Well, we're not looking at very much, but we can see out to 13 billion years.
Yeah, and after that, everything's redshifted out of.
It's beyond the edge.
So we don't know what's after that.
It's very possible that as it's expanding in our side, it's also expanding on the other side. So it could be twice as big or larger.
All right. Well, this is a happy time to take a break. If you have a call that you'd like to make, give us that call. 800-348-2551. It can be about anything. It can be hanging laundry, the universe, whatever you want. 800-348-2551. The Science Forum will be back. Welcome back to the Science Forum on Vox Pop, 800-348-2551. We have a great panel with us today. Let's see, Barbara Brabitz, Ed Stander, Jim Pickett, and Roger Giovanni here to answer your questions. And this one came in from Jane in Lenox via email. Jane's subject heading, Sunrise, Sunset. It seems that most colors in the spectrum are visible in the clouds and sky during sunrises and sunsets, except green. Why no green? And that's from Jane in Lenox. That's esoteric. You.
Yeah. Good,
yeah. We do get green.
Do we?
Yes. You get the green flash every once in a while when the sun goes down.
That's interesting. Explain the green flash.
The green flash? Well, effectively what happens is light, as the sun is setting, and effectively this is the same reason why the sun is red at sunset, is while the sun is setting, it's going through more and more atmosphere. And as it goes through more and more atmosphere, it becomes refracted more. Mm. So as it's setting down, you see the red. And sometimes, just as it's settling down, just below the horizon, you'll see a green flash because that is the light refracting off of the atmosphere and heading back down to you.
And usually that's when you have a flat horizon where it's easy to see. So a lot of people are able to see the green flash when they're at the ocean and they're looking out west at the ocean.
Right.
But it's primarily dust in the atmosphere that does the refraction.
Very, very, very fine stuff. The big trick is that the green is usually higher up. Because you first see red, then you'll see green, and then you'll see blue.
So only the tall people get to see green at sunset normally.
Green has got to be relatively high up. You have to be relatively high up to see the green.
And as far as the light that's kind of normally associated with sunsets from the scattered light, in order to see green, you have to get rid of the blue and the red, which is sort of two ends of the spectrum at the same time. And that's hard to do optically. Whereas to see red, it's a matter of getting rid of the blue, and that gets scattered out, and then you see the blue, which is the scattered light.
Interesting.
But it's tougher optically to get the green.
And of course, you see green before a tornado. The clouds are always close to green because of the ice up there, right?
Right. All of the material up in the atmosphere.
The few times I've seen green clouds, I ran for cover.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's go back to the phones, 800-348-2551. Diane in Saugerties. Diane.
Hi.
Hello.
When I drive by the farmer's field, I see these giant rolls of hay wrapped in white plastic, and I wonder, why don't they rot in there? Why don't they get mildewed, turn into compost? And apparently I'm not the only one wondering this, because the screener who took my call said he's often wondered about that himself.
Interesting.
That, being the old farm boy myself, that's because the hay has to be dried in the sun before you put it up. So it's
but
all.
How dry could it be?
Well, it's dry enough not to rot.
And it will rot if it gets wet.
Yes, it will rot if it gets wet. Now, the consequence for farmers who put up their hay green is burned down barns,
right.
Which was
really
quite common when I was a kid.
Explain.
Well, because the hay was put up green and then stacked in bales in a barn, it will start to rot and give off heat.
As a former horse farm owner,
I will tell you, you
don't put much hay in your barn.
Really?
You put as little inside as you can. You usually have a hay barn or something away from the barn to store the hay because the least little bit of moisture will cause it to get very, very hot. Typically, where you store your hay, the snow never lingers over it.
Wow.
In the winter, when we would have lots of icing on the ground, the coyotes would hang out where we dumped the muckings from the stall because all the hay was there, and it would start to compost and get hot. So the coyotes would always be on the compost pile.
What, they like the warmth?
They like the warmth.
Oh, I'll be darned. Okay. Well, that's it. Diane, thanks for that one.
So the answer is, in the sun, it dries out enough.
Yes.
And their rolls are open on the end, so they get airflow through them.
Huh.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
This spontaneous combustion of hay is fascinating.
Very, very common.
Yeah. They're in the area that I grew up with and grew up in Michigan, there would be several barn fires every year due to
lightning, but due to...
Due to the...
It used to be people stored hay over their barns. They had hay lofts.
Yeah.
And you'd have a lift to get the hay up there, but that's really gone out of fashion. You don't typically store your hay in the barn.
I wonder if there's any connection to the reported cases of spontaneous human combustion.
We have a little higher temperature of combustion than hay does, but I'm not trying that as homework.
As a scientist, Barbara, what do you think about
spontaneous human combustion? I have to say I've never met anybody who blew up later.
Oh, you've seen Spinal Tap, of course.
That was a video.
Drummers all blow up.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, I can't get anything out of you on that, so let's go back to the phones. Fred and Wine and Skill. Fred.
Hi. With a lot of the input that's hopefully going to be going into the grid from solar power, wind power, whatever other sources are going in, and with the draws that might be coming from the grid, with a lot of people in the future getting electric cars and charging them at night, plus all the other power that's moving around, is the present grid going to be able to handle this?
Huh.
Well, actually, from what I've been told, the electric companies are having a very hard time right now because there's more electricity available than they need because of LED lights, because of better refrigerators. They're looking for some place to put that energy.
And there's no form of storage.
Right. They're running into problems that way.
As a matter of fact, in Las Vegas, they're experimenting right now with towers of blocks, large concrete blocks and cranes that bring these blocks up and stack them, and then they reverse the cranes to take the energy out.
Just to waste the energy.
Well,
no. To store the energy.
How are you storing the energy?
The kinetic energy of lifting it up stores as potential energy, and then you release the potential energy back as kinetic energy.
And we have the same
thing. Now that might spontaneous combustion. You put a person under one of those blocks, ba-boom.
My real concern, though, is like, say, in the middle of the summer when everybody's drawing for AC, and then if you have hundreds of thousands of people going home and plugging their cars into charge, it just seems to me like there's going to be more likely a lot more brownouts with that sort of thing.
Well, one of the things the power companies do, apart from the blocks, is, for example, they move water uphill. And what they do is in Blenheim.
Right here in New York.
Yeah, in Blenheim, New York, what they do is they take the water and they pump it up to a lake up on top. And then during those times when they need a lot of power, they let it go back down again.
It takes a lot to turn on a boiler at a natural gas plant, certainly coal-fired boilers to make electricity. It takes hours, if not days, to get them up and ready. So if you have excess on the grid, New York Power Authority gets a call, then they're going to go store it up in the pump storage. That's what it's called. And it's the same idea as Rogers Blocks, only instead of it being a solid, it's a liquid. And then when they need energy it's only a call, and 15 minutes later, zoom, you're throwing it through the turbines and you're making electricity.
Now, is there a law? I'm sure there's some law of conservation of energy. In other words, are you getting the same amount after you put the blocks up?
No, there's not loss. Quite. There's loss associated with it. Yeah. Anytime you convert energy, there's loss associated with it.
But if it's energy that's out there that's not being used, you're going to get that through dissipation anyway.
Yeah.
So it's going to go to waste. It's kind of like eating your leftovers. They're not quite as good the first time around. Yeah. You know,
but the more we go to renewables,
better than having to order out.
Yeah. The more storage becomes an issue.
Yes.
They're looking at batteries.
What about giant capacitors?
That's a possibility. But the more we go to renewables, which tend to be cyclical, the more the storage becomes an issue and the power company. But I don't think it addresses Fred's question, which was, is the grid sufficient for the increased usage? And you like to think that they're forward planning for that.
But
I think to Ed's point, there the efficiencies of the appliances and houses. And I know we built a house with new insulation. It's a relatively new compared to the house we came from, which was 25 years old, essentially the same size. My electric bill is a third of what it was.
Wow, I'll be darned. All right, the number here is 800-348-2551, the Science Forum today. And we go to Larry in Great Barrington. Hello, Larry.
Yes, good afternoon. I would like to correct a couple of items that the gentleman said. And the first one was the last mention. It has to do with storing dry hay. And he said something about it's not fashionable to store dry hay in a barn anymore. And that's definitely not true. If you've got dry hay, you've got to store it under cover, period, or else it'll rot. The other item, and now he may be referring to haylage stored in a bunk silo, and that's a damp product, which leads me to the part about the big white marshmallow bales.
Yeah.
Those are wrapped, and the oxygen is excluded, and what that is a fermented product. It's called, just like in a silo, it's called silage, the verb to ensile, is to store in limited moisture. Hmm. So what happens in those white plastic bales is they ferment. So you have to store them at a pretty high moisture, between 30 and 70%, ideally about 50%. And it's a great product. The cows love it. I raise grass-fed organic beef, so I know what I'm talking about.
Well, you know, I'll take this one for homework, too. We have a whole, you know, I work in an ag and tech college, and I'll get the gist on the moisture content of our giant marshmallows.
So there's your homework. Well, thank you, Larry. We appreciate the call. 800-348-2551. Ed, you want to say something?
No, I was just thinking, who would have thunk?
The hay composting's a hot item today.
Well, you see, I guess you don't know, Roger, but there are shows where somebody will call early and it will be about literally hanging laundry outside, and the whole show is...
Well, we have a lot of rural people, though, that the station reaches.
My point is, it's often one topic, and then we're off to the races. You know, hot water in the freezer and things like that. But let's see what happens now. Carol in East Fishkill. Carol.
Yes. Hi, Ray.
Hello.
I have a question about the meteor. I think it was a meteor the weekend after Christmas. I saw the big flash, and I thought, oh, we're going to have a thunderstorm. And then maybe 15, 20 seconds later, it was a big bang, but it wasn't like thunder at all. And I wonder what was it? And
I read the follow-up in the paper. I saw, like, a whole bunch of stuff on my social media when it happened, and it seemed to be in kind of like the west of, kind of between the Great Sacandaga Lake and Saratoga is where people heard it.
East Fishkill's fairly far south for that. I'm amazed that she heard it there.
I know, and...
But it could have been tearing down.
Newburgh, she didn't hear anything.
It could have been tearing down through the atmosphere above you on its way to detonate here.
Saratoga.
The verdict was really through a lack of any other evidence that it was a meteorite that then actually exploded just above ground so that there was no impact crater. So I guess that would still make it a meteor.
Right.
And that it must have its final destination before Kapu was somewhere in the Saratoga County area.
Well, there you go.
Yes, I don't get the newspaper anymore, so I never heard anything, you know, more about it.
It took them about a week. 911 was inundated with calls.
Yep.
People had windows
Saratoga
broken.
County Sheriff.
Really?
Yep. Tons of calls, yeah.
And it was a definite different boom.
Yeah.
Now, they did look at seismic activity, because you can hear these bangs and kabams that are just shifts, and I'll leave that to the geologist as to why they would make so much noise. But they checked the seismic log, and all they could see was nothing special. Hmm. So they knew there wasn't an impact because there was no seismic activity, and there didn't see anything consistent with an earthquake.
Interesting.
Yeah. Well, tell me why an explosion? Why, if it doesn't hit the ground? I mean, I understand, you know, the 1/2 mv². So it's coming in,
yeah.
It hits the ground, you get a big dissipation of energy.
Right, superheated. Okay.
So it's just a thermal expansion.
It's your egg that you leave, you know, cooking in the microwave too long. Yep.
Okay.
And you understand as well that it didn't have to be a rock. It could also have been ice.
Yes.
It could have been
what was the flash in the beginning?
What caused the flash in the beginning?
Oh, that would be the explosion. As it heats up on the outside and stays cool on the inside, it's going to blow up. And as it blows up, it's going to dissipate a lot of energy.
It blew up, and then like 15 seconds later,
The light could also be from the reentry. They'll glow on reentry.
You get ionization of the atmosphere.
Right. Yeah.
And then how do we tell, like, how do we know if an earthquake makes a sound or if the sound is from an earthquake?
Oh, if the rocks break, you can hear it. It's usually a big bang, but it's relatively localized in general near the place where it happens.
All right. Carol, thank you very much for the call. The number here is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Yeah, that was an interesting case. I guess it was right after Christmas.
Yep.
I forgot to ask Carol, did she hear the bang at the same time she saw the flash?
No, she said because 10 seconds later.
That should tell you how far up it was.
Right. Yeah. That 10 miles.
Yeah.
But that's happened. I mean, this probably happens several times a day around the globe.
Actually, more than that.
Yeah.
We actually built communications equipment that was designed to communicate on the trails that the ionized trail that the meteor leaves. Yep. It's called meteor scatter communications.
But the thing about that is it's tough to plan on that. I mean, moon bounce you can plan on, but meteor scatter.
It happens frequently enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. Tell you what, Zach, calls are coming in, so let's take a break here, and then we'll get back to calls on the other side. 800-348-2551, the Science Forum. We'll be right back. It's Vox Pop Science Forum, don't you know? 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. And a few emails here, panel, and then we'll get back to the phones. This one came in from a person up in Maine who said, I tried to call, but guess you don't take calls from Maine. But we do. We had a call from Maine the other day, so I apologize you didn't get through. Make sure you have the right number. But your email got through, so here we go. What happens at the molecular level when you cut a piece of paper, say, with scissors? Are you breaking molecular bonds?
Yes.
Yes, you are.
That was easy.
Yep.
Wow.
And hydrogen bonds, by the way.
Yep.
Anything else?
No, you're disrupting the surface, so you're actually physically separating.
Not only that, but the sound of the paper ripping is the energy being lost from those bonds.
I heard that energy when Nancy Pelosi was tearing.
Yeah, you see?
You could hear that all across the country. It was so loud.
No, but you're not. There's no danger of you splitting an atom by mistake.
No.
Okay.
No. Not with those scissors.
But sometimes when you break things and break those bonds, you can see flashes of light because of the energy that's released. Yeah, well, in the dark.
No idea.
Think about the wintergreen lifesaver that you chew on and you can film it and you can see the sparks in your mouth.
It's
exactly
that.
From that.
If I can, I went to a restaurant at one point up in Montreal, which is totally in the dark. You're fed by servants.
Why is there a restaurant that's completely in the dark?
You need a reservation.
You need a reservation. This is a big deal. It's really big, and there's only two or three of them in the world.
A wine cave.
And no, it's totally in the dark. Your servants are blind people, and you have to eat everything in the dark. And we all had tablecloths. You had napkins. And I discovered after a while that you could take the napkin and rub it together and start producing sparks. You're producing static sparks with
that.
He
just couldn't sit still in
the
dark.
Before I was done, the entire place was quiet and everybody was doing it with the napkins.
I got to say, that is the most ridiculous concept I've ever heard. A completely dark, I mean, with the how do you see your food?
You can't.
What's the point, Ed?
Playing with your napkin.
It's fun. I mean, you eat in the light all the time. You might as well enjoy it in the dark sometimes.
I could just close my eyes.
All right.
I would like to tell you that I was corrected. 6 seconds per mile of sound.
Okay.
I had said 1 second.
This one is from Mark. Can you please explain? In the old days, we just had remote controls. Then we had cordless phones. But now we have Bluetooth. What exactly is Bluetooth? And how does it differ from the traditional remote control? Well, it's a two-way communication, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, it's just very, very short wave or very, very short-range radio.
Anybody want to answer that? Or
you can only be attached to one Bluetooth device at a time so far. So it's two-way, but it's not okay. It's not like Wi-Fi where multiple things can be connected at once.
Well, that's the architecture in
Bluetooth. Of the way the Bluetooth is created.
It's not a communications limitation.
Right.
All right.
It's the architecture.
Well, thanks for that one. This one's from Suzanne. Wrapped bales are haylage or balage, which is fermented like silage, put up at much higher moisture than dry baled hay.
Okay.
Well, come to think of it, I don't know any horse farm owners that had bales of hay wrapped in plastic. They were only dairy farms.
You see.
So well, that tells you that if you were to go to those bales of hay and cut a hole in them, they'd probably catch fire.
All right. The email address here is voxpopwamc.org. The phone number is 800-348-2551. This one's from Farmer John. Subject, hay storage. Abe Lincoln told a joke about how when he was young, they cut so much hay one time that they ran out of room and had to put the rest of it inside the barn. I love that corny sense of humor.
That's so funny. I was thinking the reason why we don't see hay barns anymore is because you have to pay taxes on them. But, you know, that's not science.
Is that true?
Well, if it's a marshmallow in a field, do you have to pay taxes on it?
Well, that's a good question. And don't give the folks, people in Albany can hear you. So don't.
Right.
By the way, have you seen the latest New York State permit that you now need a stargazing permit in the parks in the state of New York?
Oh, cut it out.
No, dead serious. And the parks, particularly in Long Island.
You can't look up?
It's called a stargazing permit.
That's ridiculous.
$35.
You know what?
Look it up.
We have gotten an electronic device out to check.
All right.
He's
going to
show the people at the table who are skeptical.
As you go into the park, they put a little limiter on your
head. I thought it was a bell.
And the governor's worried about the Trusted Traveler Program, and we're demanding stargazing permits?
You know what?
Well, my son and I were chased out of our local town park. Telescope and the police
were they afraid you were going to suck up all the light?
Because the park was officially closed at sunset.
Yeah,
so it may be that this allows stargazers into parks which would otherwise be closed.
Well, it really doesn't say that in that because I did read the application. It doesn't say that, but you may be right.
Well, and then charge you $35 for the possibility.
It's $35, right?
And it's an evening permit, right? And it's cheaper than cheaper than a movie.
Anybody want to take a science call?
Sure.
Okay. All right, let's do that. Chris and Rhinebeck. Chris, you're on.
Oh, hello. Hey, I wanted to just add something to the green flash discussion.
Yeah.
I spent a few summers at the South Pole, which there's no green flash then, but in the wintertime, the green flash lasts for hours because the sun is traversing along the horizon.
Oh, so
cool.
Oh, that's
interesting.
For quite a while, so people can run back inside and go get their camera and photograph the green.
Could we do a remote science forum from Antarctica?
Sure.
This is like my life's dream.
Oh, we'll do it right after the fun drive when we have the budget.
We'll get Joe to do it with us.
Chris, you'll go with us, right?
Absolutely.
All right, you show us around. All right, thanks, man. Appreciate the call. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's the science forum, and it's a weird one. Let's go to Neil in Pine Bush. Neil, you're on.
Hi, so I have a question about magnetic motors. I know it's like kind of like the Holy Grail, like a motor that keeps going, right?
Okay.
But I understand that when you transfer energy from, say, magnet pushing on a magnet to motion, you lose energy through entropy, right? My question is, could you technically recharge the magnet while you were using it, like via electromagnet?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, but I don't quite understand the question in that.
Go ahead, Jim.
All electric motors are basically magnetic motors, and there's no way to get more energy out than you put in. There's nothing magic about a magnet. Talking about recharging or something that's nonsense, because you cannot get more out than you put in. So nothing runs forever.
And entropy, you don't run entropy the other way. And if you do, then you have to create, you have to expend work to do so.
Yep, and make more entropy somewhere else.
And so those entropy losses are real.
Okay, simple question. I just was always curious. You know, while the car is coasting, you could be recharging. I know that's how some of the electric cars work. I mean,
but you can reorient the magnetic fields. Essentially, recharge is probably not the right word, but you can, you know, over time those fields will become disrupted and lose magnetic push, magnetic energy, and you can reorient them by remagnetizing them.
Right.
And you're not regaining energy when you're coasting. You regain energy when you're braking. So energy that would otherwise just be dissipated by heat is instead charging the battery in the hybrid.
All right, Neil, thanks a lot for the call. I remember seeing footage when I was a kid, films, maybe in school, and somebody did a science project, I think the government did, a submarine that ran on magnetic, along the lines of magnetic force.
Oh, sort of like the magnetic cannon?
Do you remember seeing this thing?
Yeah, I mean, there can be propulsion mechanisms by magnetic fields in the salt water, because the salt water being conductive.
Tom Clancy talks about that in some of his books.
Yeah, that as caterpillar drive or something. So that's feasible in salt water.
It was a small model, but I think it's fairly famous.
And you've got things like the maglev,
which is amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. The maglev. You've seen the maglev turntables? I think we talked about that, right?
They're frightening.
Yeah, I can't imagine that would be a good purchase. Maybe they are. Don't sue me. 800-348-2551. Wayne in Cragsmore. Wayne, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I like listening to your station. And what I would like to talk about today, I heard you something about eating in the dark at a restaurant.
Yeah.
But anyway, in my house, I'm really a conservation environmentalist over 30 years, and many radio stations I've done, and on TV, and over 30 years as a watchdog volunteer with the Riverkeeper.
Yeah.
But anyway, what I've come up with that has been extremely healthy and extremely energy saving is we don't need electric if we don't use electric. In my house, if you forget the light on and you're in a room and you left, you have to pay 25 cents.
Oh.
When I went to work, I did over 30 years for three different railroads down in Croton, New York. I was a self-made whistleblower. But anyway, I carpooled with two other drivers, so that's one car instead of three.
Yeah.
And I encourage people to take, if we're going to go on a ride, I'm a avid bird watcher and, like I say, environmentalist big time.
Yeah.
But you take the car that gets the best mileage. And what I was alerted to, the lady across the street from me is a teacher, and about 3 or 4 weeks ago, a child had an asthma attack and died from it in her school, and I think it's the Tri-Valley School near the Roundout Reservoir.
Mm-hmm.
But when I was young, one or two children that I knew had asthma, but one seminar I gave down in Croton, every child in the class did. So a lot of times when I'm on the mountains, hawk watching and counting and looking at things, you have a mini LA effect, and it's not healthy at all. So less is more with all this energy, and my friend that kind of goes along with me, he gets the lowest bills. I think it's Central Hudson is his company, $31, $35.
Wow.
And you can live a lot by daylight. I mean, I don't want people walking into dark rooms and you know, take a chance of hurting themselves. I don't mean it that way at all. But a lot of times as the inventions go on, I mean, my dealings with the Einstein projects and things were – you know, he really regretted splitting the atom. I met three times with the people from Fukushima, and they are in dire straits, still melting down.
Let me.
So a lot of things that seem green and clean aren't that way, really. So less is more.
All right.
And even when they came out the mercury light bulb, and this is great, but you know, asbestos took like 40 or 50 years to put that this can hurt you.
Yeah.
Cigarette smoking was 70 years to put on the pack. This could kill you.
Delicious.
So less is more with all this stuff. And 200 years ago or so, we had a jewel of a planet. I mean, almost all the waters were drinkable.
Yeah. You have a question for the panel?
Excuse me.
Do you have a question for the group?
No, I just was trying to impress on some of the things that
that's
I found
good.
To be energy saving and environmentally really well.
Well, you said it very well, Wayne. We really do appreciate the call. Wayne, thanks for the call. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. And let's go over to Tim in Middletown. Tim, you're on.
Yes, good afternoon.
Sure.
I heard you guys commenting earlier about the plastic round bales as you see it on the field.
Yeah.
And this is just another quick comment. The cows are ruminants and horses are not. So the horses can't eat the fermented hay.
Right.
Horses are much more picky about their hay
right.
than cows are. Yep.
Well, but they can't eat the fermented hay either, like corn silage. They can't eat any of that kind of stuff.
Right.
And then another reason you see more of those is the labor costs. You only need one person to bale up the round bales versus a whole team of people to put the hay in the barn.
There you go.
Yeah, I have a friend, a colleague who teaches college and wanted to keep busy in the summer and harken back to his youth and wanted to throw bales and asked me if my connections with local farmers, if I could find him a job. And they were like, nope, we don't do that anymore.
Hmm. I'd be interested in knowing whether...
Anyway, I just wanted to share that with you guys.
Hang on, Tim. Ed, go ahead.
No, I just had a quick question.
Yep, go ahead.
Is the fermented hay, does that wind up producing more methane when it's eaten by the cows?
Interesting question.
I don't think the cows really care because they chew their cud anyway. It helps another way, though, because the grass is a little more nutritious when it's cut a little greener.
Hmm.
And then it doesn't have to dry as much. It keeps a little bit more of its nutrition. And you also don't have to worry about it getting rained on. And rained on hay is not nearly as nutritious as non-rained on hay either. So there's a lot of benefits.
Well, thank you, Tim. We appreciate that call. 800-348-2551. Carl in Poughkeepsie. Carl, you're on.
Yeah, I had heard you talking about having to pay to observe the stars. And I just wanted to inform you that you can go to Lake Taconic with the Mid-Hudson Astronomy Association once a month around New Moon for no charge. We're insured. We have a permit. And we bring telescopes. You can bring your own. What you have to do is go to our website and register. The observing happens on Friday nights near New Moon. And we have to have your plate number to report to the park police, state police, by Thursday afternoon for the Friday observing. And we back it up with the Saturday observing if we're clouded out on Friday. We've been doing this for several years, 35 years actually, originally in a Dutchess County park, but had a budget cut.
I have a quick question for you. Have you noticed that there have been maybe five or six clear nights in the last couple of months?
Our last observing session, which was a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
There was a four-hour hole strategically at about, went around 7 or 11.
Yeah, okay, that's not bad. That's all right.
It was fine.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking. You never know. I mean, we've been up there. I was up there in the summer, and a third of the sky was obscured by smoke from a forest fire up in Manitoba.
Okay. Well, Carl, thank you.
And I'll put in a quick plug. The Albany Amateur Astronomers also, I think, have weekly or monthly stargazings at the Landis Arboretum.
Ah.
We're going to send a couple of park rangers over there to make sure.
Yeah. That's free, too.
That's free.
Come as you will.
And they bring their big telescopes.
Nice. Let's go to Kay in Stone Ridge. Kay, you're on.
Hi. So I actually know why restaurants are completely black occasionally.
Yeah.
I have a friend who is in a wheelchair, and she runs a disability unit at the Smithsonian.
Yeah.
And she has introduced me to several different kinds of experiences where you experience what a person will be experiencing themselves, and you eat in a restaurant in the complete dark in order to find out what it's like to be blind.
Ah, is that true, Ed?
Is that
why?
It is true.
Is that, that's
and people
that's
pay a pretty penny to discover what it's like to be blind, which I could I could show them easily enough, as Barbara said, just by closing your eyes. But that's a whole other story.
Well, they say, you know, the culinary experience is better because you're
focusing on another
unless
sense. Unless the food's bad, right?
Well, I think this place has been around for a while, so
well,
its
my
food
mother
is past
was very
muster.
Upset because for dessert, she ordered the creme brulee, and she put her hand in there because there was, of course, no silverware or anything. She said, there's nothing in here, because she was just feeling the top of the creme brulee, which is all burned up.
Oh, very interesting. Peter and Leverett. Peter, you're on.
Hi. I'm reading an article in the New Yorker magazine about Yuval Noah Harari, the author of the book Sapiens. Have any of you read that book?
Nope.
It's by Ian Parker. The article's by Ian Parker. And at one point, the author, Mr. Harari, says, it's like the weak force in physics, which is weak but still strong enough to hold the entire universe together. And the author, Mr. Parker, puts in parentheses, in fact, the weak force is responsible for the disintegration of subatomic particles. So, and that says one thing is that this guy, Harari, plays a little fast and loose with the laws of nature. But also, what is the purpose of that weak force disintegrating subatomic particles? Does that give off energy? Is that how energy is produced, one way it's produced?
Yeah, the weak force is involved in radioactive decay, but I don't know very much about that and why. It's one of the four principal forces. It's not the gravity, though, is the weakest of the forces.
Right.
But
also the least understood, right?
Pretty much, yeah. Well, so I really don't know what the weak force does for us.
But, all right. We'll have to take that one for homework for a decade down the road. How are things going at school over Kobe?
We're a third through. Spring break will happen, I think, before our next science forum.
Oh, great.
So I'll have gotten some sleep by then.
Yeah, we'll be actually able to talk reasonably.
We'll see about that. Well, thank you all for being here. Ed Stander, Barbara Bravitz, Jim Pickett, Roger Jaboni for being here. Support comes from Capital Roots, working year-round to provide nourishment, community, and a sense of belonging for individuals who call the Capital Region home. CapitalRoots.org to learn more. Interactive Media Consulting, a team of online marketing strategists providing websites, branding, and digital marketing to the Capital Region and beyond since 1996. iMediaConsult.com. The Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College presenting Flex, an exhibition on muscular physiques across time. Opening talk and reception February 22nd at 4 p.m. Skidmore.edu/Tang. At Merritt Bookstore, Millbrook, gardening books for summer planning, journals, toys for winter birthdays, and books for long winter days, MerrittBooks.com. Well, once again, thanks to our panel of experts for being here today. Thank you for listening. Thanks for the calls. Thanks for the emails. Thanks to Zachary Malloy, our engineer. Phones were answered today by Jim Harrison. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis, also Jackie Orchard. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, we do the Mardi Gras thing. Chef Rick Orlando will be here. That's 2 p.m. tomorrow. Be there for that. Right now, stand by for the Capital Connection.